Welcome everyone to Electronic Talks Podcast, episode 27. I'm Johannes, your host, and today with me, I've got one of the most renowned DJs in Stockholm and producer, of course, Mr. Top Hat. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing, man?
I'm quite good. I feel it's good to be in Stockholm.
Nice.
Since I moved to the countryside for some years ago. So now when I'm in Stockholm, I feel it's much more fun to be here because it's not just because it's a fun city, but it's take away the daily life and then you see it with new eyes, which I really like and appreciate.
That's a great thing to be able to appreciate the city, yeah. To get away for a while.
I think I was, I guess that is what's happening when something becomes too common. In the end, it can be dull and you don't see the qualities.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Mm. But you actually grew up in Stockholm, in Högdalen, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So could you tell me a little bit how, like, your journey from growing up in that area of Stockholm to discovering music?
Mm. So my parents are artists. And when I grew up in Högdalen, I lived in my home. My dad, he used to work home, and it was like a easel, or what, I don't know what it's called, but the apartment had two floors.
Yeah.
So on the upper floor he had his studio, and since he always like played music when he's drawing and painting, mm-hmm. The music spread in the apartment, yeah. And For him, music have always been extremely important, especially in his process of making and creating art. Mm-hmm. It was like Six Pistols, and sometimes it was Bach. I actually sent my mother for some days ago super good music from the 7th century Spanish, old Renaissance music.
Wow.
Mm. I mean, it's really, really good. And it's sort of minimalistic Baroque.
Yeah.
And then I talked with her like yesterday, and then she said like, but you know that we played this album, don't you remember when you was really small, all the time home? And yeah. I was like, no, I didn't know that. So I guess in one way I was Baptist. Mm-hmm. With music I got exposed for a lot of different, like I said, everything from punk music, mm-hmm. to classical music and jazz and stuff. But of course, when you're a teenager, you don't want to be like your parents, and even if it's like, was in my opinion, high quality music and really, really good stuff. And he also did a lot of, for some years, to bring in money to the family, he mm-hmm. was making illustrations for Dagens Nyheter, the daily newspaper.
Yeah.
And I think it was every week they had like a big in the culture pages for about musicians. And it could be dead, and it mm-hmm. could also be alive.
Yeah.
So it could be a massive attack, but the other one, mm-hmm. next time it could be about Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yeah.
So in this way, he also received a lot of promos.
Mm-hmm.
So the music was also very contemporary in his studio. It was not only like music from the past.
Yeah.
And then he also, through this, he started making record artwork for records.
Okay, yeah.
And that was how he met Christian Falk and Jocke Åhlund. And Christian Falk, I was just a small kid, but he was for me, like, since he was a lot home in our apartment,
mm-hmm.
he also was my go-to when I asked about, you know, when I started DJing.
Right,
how to start.
Mm-hmm.
Because Högdalen was, during this time, it's still a suburb, but during the 90s it was not a nice suburb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like a child, I don't think, in one way, childs are more, they're more sensitive to shit, but they are also, they don't care, they are more careless in one way.
Yeah.
So in one way, I had a lot of fun to grow up in Högdalen. But it also, when I became like a teenager, then I think it started becoming more problematic.
Yes.
I mean, either you hang out in the, is it called Centrum? No.
Yeah, in the center.
And just doing shit.
Yeah.
And I don't feel, you know, since my parents have always like said, don't go with like good intentions, then life will be better.
Or right.
You will have better. A lot of kids sadly doesn't have this support from home.
Right.
And then it can be very problematic.
Mm.
But I stayed a lot of home, and I think the computers, we got our first computer quite late.
Right.
Mm. And this opened up for a lot of, you know, sitting home instead of going out and like downloading music and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was actually when I changed upper secondary school to a construction program.
Okay, construction.
Yeah,
okay,
because I started with like a really theoretical medicine program to become like a doctor and stuff. But after a year, I got, they told me you have so much dyslexia.
Right.
And then they asked me, do you want to continue with this?
Right.
And I was like, maybe not. And then they asked what you would want to do instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then I changed to a construction work program, which is like day and night.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And what you read in 1 year on a theoretical program is what you do in 3 years. So every second weekend when I was an internship on a construction place, I had free time. So I had a lot of free time, you know.
Right.
And this free time, I was home. And then I really, really started like downloading music in the beginning to the games I was playing.
Ah, I see.
So okay, I was like downloaded because this is before streaming.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to have music digitally, and if you're a teenager, you don't have money to go and buy CDs, in the sense of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I started downloading music for when I was gaming, and then suddenly, you know, when you start downloading, you want also to make index and after a while, you also start. You start to understand what you like and not like, because you don't want to go like with the parents. You don't want to go in their step. You want to develop some thinking of your own.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, electronic music started, I think I was like 16. And also during this time, it was still like rave parties when you had to make calls and stuff.
Yes.
So
classic.
And this rave parties in Stockholm during this time, it was like a sort of border because it was after Docklands.
Yes.
And before like Berghain and this sort of.
Yes.
This is also around 2006, 2005. So cell phones doesn't really have cameras and stuff.
Yeah.
But the rave parties we went to, me and my friends from Högdalen, it was basically drum and bass rave parties.
Mm-hmm.
And also psytrance rave parties.
Right.
That was like this the rave culture. But minimal techno and house, which for me, I was more obsessed than, or like the Swedish techno with Joel Mullen.
Yeah.
That was not really as established yet.
At that time.
Or it was like in a border. It had passed.
Yeah.
Because Adam and these guys, they were already big and had left. And so it was like, but in one sense, it was much more hardcore.
Right.
And maybe more tolerated in one way.
Yeah.
I remember the age was either you were really, really young or you were quite old.
Yeah. If you were into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and but this sort of things really like sat there. It made the traces of my music identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, it was a lot of drum and bass and psytrance and stuff. But after a while, you start. For me, like music interest is also a lot about history.
Yes,
I really like history.
Mm-hmm.
So quite early, I wanted also to understand what was before this.
Yeah.
And quite fast you are at like Kevin Saunderson and Derek May and Jeff Mills and why is it named House? Because it's starting warehouses, you know, and stuff
exactly.
like this.
Yeah.
And you understand it was like the black communities from Detroit and Chicago and combined actually with like Kraftwerk and stuff like this of influences. So it's also, but this made me, it was not only music, it was also a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which for me, I sort of felt really connected with this.
Yeah.
Because it's music that really, for instance, like house music or rave parties is when class or gender or ethnicity is completely dissolved.
Yes.
And it's like both the trivial and the beauty. I mean, it's... So that is sometimes I can feel myself if it's going, if it's too theoretical,
yeah.
it also lose the thing.
Yes.
And it was like I asked Chess Damier once when I met him the first time and about the music, and he said like we were just kids. We just went. We had the opportunity to borrow like someone's parents' studios, and then went in and just created. And according to him, it was like, since it was not really, they just tried out and they were in very, but he said like, I can't do this now. It's like,
exactly.
It's dependent that you don't really know about it.
Exactly.
And that, I mean, one way it's very simple, and that is the beauty. I guess it's like Picasso said.
Yeah.
It took him a whole life to paint again like a child.
Exactly. Yeah,
And but regarding like this downloading and finding your... In the beginning, it's maybe some music that I don't listen to anymore, but I can respect it and stuff. But this sort of... developed you into find what you really like and what sort of harmonies you are out of after.
Yes.
I mean, I can strongly respect a lot of musicians, but sometimes I don't like it because it's not my harmony.
That's it, yeah.
And that's really subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do this in download, in the beginning when you download like everything. And after a while, you're trying to find, because like say, this is before Spotify and anything.
Exactly.
So how are you going to listen to the music you download?
Yeah.
Well, you have to go into, thanks God, we had Juno and Dix and all these sort of sites that sold music online.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could have the snippets and previews of the music you wanted to download.
Yeah.
And that thing was like, then I started, you know, downloading what I liked and indexing, and I became a big pirate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when I didn't have this internship, I saw it like a work. I did it like very every day. And when you had done the daily today's releases.
Right. Yeah.
And you were done, then you started like, it exists also news here on this site.
Right.
And then you started like scribbling through the news of these sites where you're buying music. And then I started realizing how much music that was actually released that were never digital. So I made documents with the music I waited for to download, because usually it took some weeks. They started with the vinyl release and then some weeks after the digital was released.
Yes.
Mm. And so many times, like half of the lists... never came out.
Never came,
And that really like kicked me to start buying music.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I believe like Spotify is shit, basically. Because if I talk with my parents or friends of them, like they believe they are supporting the musicians.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually better for the music industry with having illegal download. And when you want to buy something, you make the, because you don't want to be a pirate. It's like, if I find something that's good, then I go and buy it. But Spotify and Apple Music and stuff, it have created a sort of ghost or something that's like, just making people believe. Like, yeah. For instance, if you want to listen to one of my tracks, and if I own 100% of all material,
yeah,
if you listen 24/7 on this track that is 7 minutes, mm-hmm. it takes you 45 days, then I have earned about $3.5.
Right.
That is what the train tickets, subway ticket cost me to just coming here and making this podcast.
Yeah.
So imagine, yeah. Like instead of like buying a vinyl, mm-hmm. okay, you have downloaded maybe 100 albums.
Right.
But buying an album is like, the revenues would be so much.
It goes, truly goes back to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is, the thing is like with the music industry, it also cuts all sort of leads.
Yeah.
So in the end, you can't really pay any more like mixing engineers, yeah. Like no. things that the normal listeners doesn't really think about.
Yeah.
And also in the end, it's like microphones, technicals, everything is just like getting worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of this. So yeah. They don't understand. They have done a lot of money for a short while, but soon we will have all, it will just...
Yeah,
die probably.
I totally understand that, and I agree with you in many ways as well. And so let's say you were this pirate sitting there, or you were starting mm-hmm. to index all of your music. How did that actually transition to starting playing it outside or DJing?
So when I started, you know, with downloading this indexing and starting mm-hmm. like interesting me for and sort of understanding it exists a scene.
Yeah.
It's and then YouTube is 2005 or 2004.
Something like that. Yeah.
So this is around 2006. And I remember how some people with their digital cameras filmed from some clubs around in Europe.
Right.
So in mm-hmm. one way, I mean, I got also like when you saw like clips, early clips from mm-hmm. DC10 or
yeah.
actually people that filmed from Panorama Bar and stuff, and you saw, because it was only one that filmed that had the possibility
right.
or ID, because yeah, yeah. no one had the cameras on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw this like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And it was like the church, and that started me also to like save money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and go to like taking the cheapest flights around Europe with mm-hmm. friends and discover this musicians you liked and stuff. And I guess somewhere here, I also wanted to try out to, it started with playlists when you play, mm-hmm. And then you wanted to combine them or yeah. like discover, and it looked really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then my go-to was Christian Falk, because I asked my parents and they said like, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You might ask Christian, he's a big DJ and he knows about. And he said to me, he helped me, and he said, buy two Technics 1210.
Yeah.
And so we helped him. He went to different persons and bought two secondhand. Mm-hmm. I had saved some money. And he said to me, if you learn to beat match with the vinyl, mm-hmm. everything else will get easy. Start with that. So, and then I was like, yeah, of course. And so I guess everything of this was a little bit in the same time.
Yeah.
And then you bought like maybe, you know, 10, 15 vinyls, all yeah. the like money you had for a month or something. And this started collecting. And I'm very happy for that.
Yeah.
And after a while, he said also to me, you know, you can make money off this, because...
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was more like a hobby or interest.
Right.
And music was like, I don't know, music is so differently. You can be alone or you can make it together with other.
Yeah.
And the school system that learns how to play is very like squared.
Yeah.
They don't learn about, they learn some basic stuff that is, this is how it's supposed to be experienced and how you should play.
Yeah.
Instead of going on to intentions. For me, it can be good, but for me, it was very bad, because it's also like friends of mine saying, you can't play this instrument and stuff.
Right, you know? Right.
But it's just, a mixing console or mixer or like the vinyl turntables, mm-hmm. they are instruments, highly instruments also. But like, so for me, music was also a little bit combination of something that I felt uncomfortable with mm-hmm. for a long time.
But to kind of challenge that.
Yeah, and Christian was like a person that really said, no, it doesn't really exist any wrong or rights. You can just do it. And
yeah.
And I think that was, he was really playful in that meaning. Mm. And
yeah, it seems like a nice development stage for you at that time.
Yeah.
And what would you say enticed you, like, because you... At the start, or in the beginning of your career, you had two notable labels, with which was Junkyard Connections mm-hmm. and also Karlovac Records. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about that, like moving from DJing to actually founding a label and releasing music? Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration?
Quite fast. I mean, I would mm-hmm. say after 2-3 years yeah. of the DJing, I started realizing I wanted to create and like, get out my own like expressions mm-hmm. and the first song that's released was High Valley. So, and it was actually through Oscar Vedrén that learned me, or Talfi also yeah. known as, that I also later created Karlovac with together with.
I see.
But it's the Junkyard Connections was, it came before I created music myself. And it was actually with this indexing and understanding that it was community mm-hmm. and how you can, in a one way, how can you support this?
Yeah.
Because also if we're going back like with the piracy, and this is what I believe, if you are thinking human being and if you steal or what, making something that's maybe mm-hmm. you feel also, I want to give something back.
Yeah.
And I don't care if someone is downloading my music.
Yeah.
Because during this time, it was really no economy in the digital world. Mm-hmm. So it was also, I didn't really care about. However, yeah. so, and then I asked another friend of my parents that was working for EMI during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And had a lot of, like, he had been working in this music industry and with record labels, on the record label side.
Yeah.
And remember, I asked him, I'm thinking of creating and founding a record label, but how do I do? And it was so harsh. I was just, you just start releasing music.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you have to find music you want to release. And then mm-hmm. it's just releasing. And then I was like, but any record label? He was like, no, you just. Yeah. And it's maybe not that easy that he says, but actually it was.
Yeah.
Because it opened me up to start looking for music.
Mm-hmm.
And this
mm-hmm.
was when SoundCloud was quite early, which was really good in that sense. I think SoundCloud was good, really good in the beginning. They may be good yet, I don't know, still, but I don't know. I think they started becoming, I don't know, some sort of wannabe Facebook or something like that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it was much more like a sort of community to find like people like myself or... And there I found Adam Strömstedt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just, you know, scribbling around and searching on, and apparently, maybe it was their algorithm, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was in Stockholm, and I started contacting him. And we had absolutely no friends in common or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I say, like, it was my first internet date.
Right. Yeah.
And it was so strange, you know, to meet him the first time and mm-hmm. say, like, I want to release. And then I applied for Stockholm, had some money they gave out to mm-hmm. people under 20 years, I think, for right. different projects, mm-hmm. the textile projects. Or, mm-hmm. And I applied for that and got money. So that gave me money to release the first record.
Right.
And when the first record was out, it became an economy. So mm-hmm. when the first release was sold some copies, I could get money to make another release.
Right.
So that was really cool. And that mm-hmm. the second was with Hannes Netzell. And during the first time I was in Lund and studying. Then when I came back, I started working out with Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
I met actually Oscar a few years before when we worked in a bar together, Rish, here in Stockholm.
Okay, yeah.
he was a bartender, I was a runner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Oscar was always really nice to me. Mm. And he was also interested in electronic music.
Mm.
And I think he started to understand this small guy. He have a lot. He said to me, "You're only listening to gub techno, old man's techno."
Right.
I was like, "Yeah, well." He said, like, "I don't know anyone that's like 18 that listened to early Per Grindvik and, you know, this
mm-hmm.
Sort of." And that was kind of interesting, you know, we combined it because he's 10 years older than me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I came back from Lund, we started hang out again, mm-hmm. or like mm-hmm. more properly in the studio. And he actually was a guy that also teach me how to produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He and Adrian Lux was producing together, and they met through some. I can't really remember. It was in Solna in Stockholm. They had some. Electronic music program.
Yeah.
Mm. Like some sort of school. I think they met there. I'm not sure, but I think it was in that way. And he learned of me a lot of basic stuff.
Mm.
And said, "You have to work with a Mac Logic and stuff." Okay. So from PC I went.
Mm.
And Carlo, in the beginning, we just created music together. And on side, I had Junkyard Connections and, you know, released music.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had, I think, 5 EPs or something, like when we had a bunch of tracks and EPs,
yeah,
and we sent them around to different labels we liked, and got rejected by everyone.
Oh, really? Mm.
No, it's not for us. This is not what we have. Blah blah blah. Our schedule is everything is full in the pipe and stuff. And then I told Oscar, like, let's do our own label, like with mm-hmm. Junkyard. It's, I mean, if they don't, why not put it out myself? And Oscar, he is a little bit skeptical sometimes.
Yeah.
More than, I'm more like, yes, sure, or like, no. And he's much more slower and conservative in the sort of sense of taking decisions, which is a good combination.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, he said, like, okay, let's do this. But we need to do it really properly. And I was like, okay.
Mm.
And then he had some ideas how we should do with the PR and stuff, which I was like, sure. But he said, like, this will also, we need some money, capital in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then we started a limited company.
Yeah.
Which I think was really good. So it was a little bit on win or lose.
Yeah.
But we put out, I think, 3 or 4 releases with PR and stuff. And after the first release, when we got the feedback, it was extremely good. And like a lot of the feedback came also from labels that we had been rejected for and stuff.
Right.
And that opened up a lot of doors. So suddenly, like, the biggest DJs around Europe started play our music.
Mm.
And it was very conceptual, the whole Karlovac project, I would say.
Yeah.
Junkyard is more, I would say the releases are extremely different. It's much more how I feel and, like, I mean, it's everything from Jocke Åhlund and my dad's experimental folk or rock project.
Right.
And then you have, like, some Baba Stilts remix that's straight up techno, and mm-hmm. it's like, so it's really different.
Yeah.
But Karlovac, we followed like a sort of path in a sort of sound, and we created a sound.
Yeah.
And I guess that was also, we called it the Karlovac engine.
Uh-huh.
If
okay.
it fits in the Karlovac engine. And when I listen still on it, it's like I can in one way get goosebumps because it's, I hear it immediately, it's the Karlovac engine.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is something that's hard to make your own.
Yeah, for sure.
It's it needs this sort of, that you can a little bit control each other. But it also can get a little bit impatient.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, the concept is already there. You know what, what to expect.
Yeah.
Not exactly that you know exactly how the next track is going to sound, but you know it's going to be in the Kerouac, in the path of the Kerouac engine in one or another way.
Yeah.
And that can become like, I don't know, but it's, I think that was the problem why we couldn't really keep it up,
mm-hmm.
because after like some years and maybe 20, I can't really, mm-hmm. but 20 releases, but a lot of like, it started to become like narrow for both, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very natural that it is like that.
Yeah.
And we met really much in this Kerouac project, but when it came to more like, for me, in disco influences,
yes,
and going more like in a sort of, I think Oscar felt it was, why should we do this? Like, mm-hmm. it's already done, or maybe, mm. you know, something, and he wanted to go in another way. And
yeah, so it was kind of a natural conclusion
exactly.
to that era of your
yeah,
production.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And would you say like that was one of your big collaborations, but you've done a lot of collaborations with others. Do you feel there's also advantages, and what do you prefer also when you do music of your own, could you say?
I mean, I think I in the end prefer to work with others when it's coming to music.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also sometimes I can appreciate, like, for instance, with my own albums, like Dusk to Dawn and
yeah,
and
so that
This
was
Is Pop.
Three-part album.
Exactly.
It's Dusk like, to Dawn, yeah.
And a lot of stuff I did also on Junkyard Connections and stuff,
mm-hmm.
all also in the meantime when we and Oscar. It's like, it's much, for me, it's much more harder also because I have easy to be stuck in a sort of loop, not
yeah.
in loop in the sort of music, but also when you're making mixdowns and stuff.
Yeah.
You, it's like sometimes hard to see when it's done and finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially like how it's coming to, how my productions have become is I want to have the possibilities to change.
Yeah.
And that is sometimes regarding that can sometimes be like a impression.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a maze.
Mm-hmm. But how did you deal with that when you did Dusk to Dawn, for an instance?
Mm.
What was the theme? What was the thing you were trying to do? Since it's a quite a big scope of a project, and
it's
I heard you spend a lot of time in the studio.
Super big.
Yeah.
We're coming back later to mm-hmm. with working with someone else. But with
yeah.
Dusk to Dawn, when we're now talking about it, it was, I like, okay, if we take with the project me and Oscar had
mm.
with the Kerouac engine, we mm. had also like templates.
Yeah.
We worked with, we had certain templates with projects and had
yeah.
a sort of methodical, like, I think, I mean, it was not from the first, but after a while we understood we had like different sort of methods how to work further.
Yeah.
And that was also, I believe, why we could put out in a tempo because
yes.
we had formed like an idea. And
yeah.
this is something you can create when you two and share the same sort of visions,
mm-hmm.
sort of attitude towards the medium. But when it came to be alone, I'm working always on empty canvas, let's say.
Uh-huh.
It's like I never open a already existing project.
Yeah.
But in Kerouac, it could be like that.
I see. Yeah,
I don't know if it was a lot of times, but I know that it happened maybe 2-3 times
mm-hmm.
that we opened old projects
right.
and took away a lot of stuff and kept some and
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm doing myself, always like empty and start. And this started out with having, I guess, sort of demos or ideas, different.
Yeah.
And during this time, I had some contact with Axel Boman. I have a lot of contact with him. And
mm-hmm.
But I think it was some tracks. We started creating a project together.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of own stuff going on then. Yeah. I don't know. I have never really actually talked with him about it. But I think the Talaboman, the first project was kicking in with him. And probably other things, and like, which I would never like blame him sometimes. Mm-hmm. But after a while, it came to me a point like, fact is, I do it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait on someone else. I need to develop my own demos.
Yes.
So I think the part one is actually like the intro and Dusk to Dawn. I think Vivid Imaginations, Tears of Illuminations, and Untitled. It's something else. But it was in the beginning was meant to be about 1 hour.
Right. So the first part was supposed to be 1 hour.
Exactly.
Long. Yeah.
And it was so it was like 1 hour, and I start talk with a really good friend of mine. He's also the oldest on this album. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Regarding like working with others.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a solo project.
Yeah.
But every more or less is written and composed together with someone else, or people have singing or playing, because it also I can't play guitar.
Right. Yeah.
But if I know Mats Bergström, why shouldn't I ask him, like, you know, for instance, So Per-Erik, he's the flute player.
Yeah.
He's extremely good flute player, and he's also very interesting to talk about music. Mm-hmm. He's more in the folk and classical music.
Yeah.
And talking about dance music and dance with him, it opened up a lot of ideas. And we started with, like, I think, I don't know which one is the first that he's playing on, but intro is it's a really early he's playing on.
Yeah.
And this also, during this time, I hanged out a lot with Robin's brother, Jack.
Okay.
Yeah. Jack was during this time a professional dancer in dance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with stage dance.
Right.
I guess it's...
And
he also gave me, because even if my parents are artists, they're visual artists.
Yeah.
And dance for me, it's something I don't know anything about dance.
Right.
More than I like to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you like to dance, then you have, what I have understood from Jack is, then you are a very long, he said, it's so many people that there are professional dancers.
Yeah.
But they don't like to dance.
Right.
And it's the same with art or whatever it was like. But he taught me a lot and stuff. So in the beginning, it was meant to be sort of classical music. And it also came with the rave scene. I was so tired to be on like rave parties and people. I don't want to make a judge, but you know, when you just see people like this, instead of taking out dance, I was like, okay, if they dance like this, why not make an album that's made for the stage? So you sit in a nice chair, maybe on a Thursday.
Right.
And you see maybe ballet dancers dance to the music.
Yeah.
So it's developed to be like, it's never happened when it was released. But in the beginning, it was meant to be for stage dancing.
Yes, yes.
And the narrative... Quite early, I had also the narrative to work around the night, from the night, from the sun is going down to the sun is coming up.
Right.
It's also about, from Derrida, about the dead, and during the day it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I was extremely, had a lot of sorrow, and was both angry and sad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the night has sort of combinations with this.
Yeah.
So the team was there and a lot of demos. And then I started working around this to sort of dissolve the electronic musical, and like a statement, fuck off for my heritage and go more to the classical music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually me and one guy from Universal, we worked with this towards Deutsche Grammophon, who is Universal based.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it was when I was maybe like 18, 19 or 20, I remember I bought two Deutsche Grammophon records.
Yeah.
That was with, one was called Krieg and one which was Ricardo Villalobos. It's the same. And the other one is with Francis the New York guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they really like, that was also a guess from my dad with the classical music and stuff. Like,
yeah,
this is cool. How you can, and I can see that with Ricardo Villalobos, why I like him so much, is because it's not only electronic music. You can feel this person. He have so, it's so dense of musical and understanding in all sort of ways.
References.
And, it's everything from psytrance to classical music in one way.
Yeah.
And then it goes through you, and you. And it's coming out your vision of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where was it? The classical, we worked towards Deutsche Grammophon.
Yeah.
And like with the major companies, they have a sort of buffer or what they, Deutsche Grammophon is still German universal, German parcel. And I think they were in the end of taking mine. Or Benny's Abbas, and they took it.
Yeah,
I'm not going to judge it. I guess they have got more streams and sold more copies than if they took this.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe he's also in an avant-garde in one way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a kind of fun and interesting piano album.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, when it was not going to happen with Deutsche Grammophon.
Right.
I felt like I need to put out this music. And during this time, I started working with more and more and more.
Yeah.
So it, from the classical parts, it just became more and more classical.
Yeah.
Because that was also one thing they said to me in the meetings. It's too much electronical music still. It's too much dance music.
Right.
So I did a lot of things that was even far away from dance music.
Yeah.
And the most of them are on part three.
Yeah.
And but when I understood I'm doing it myself, it felt weird to go back to and just release one when I had so much material.
Yeah.
And then I am sort of understood I'm going to do this myself, and then I'm going to go back to my roots and take back what I didn't like.
Right.
Which was, I believe, good. And
yeah.
But the thing that was really, I mean, I think I put down more or less 10,000 hours on this project.
Right.
And maybe 50,000 euros during the process of just like hiring musicians and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's like all my money I earned all the time spare, like I put this in this project.
Yeah.
And the problem is maybe also to be the person that sender.
Yeah.
So I started this label, and I'm never going to do it again. It was too much because I did the artwork and everything myself.
Yeah.
And it almost cost me my life in this process.
Mm-hmm. It took so much out of you.
It took me so much out of me, and I worked. I became so manic, so I didn't really understand about. I was sleeping, but I went up like 7 and came home like 1 a.m.
Right.
Every day for 1.5 years or something.
Yeah.
And after a while, I guess it was, mid of the project, I was also smoking quite much weed. Was also not a really good idea.
Yeah.
Because it's got really messy in many ways.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy I could take this Sisyphus project into goal.
Yeah.
But it was really ironical when it was also Swedish Grammy nominated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they gave the Grammy to Tim Berling, Avicii, who was already dead. And he talked on the stage about mental health.
Right.
Which is sad. And of course, I mean, it's poor Tim. It's I think it's the industry that have created his death in one way.
Yeah.
And they can say whatever they want, but it's like that.
Sure. Mm.
And then the same guys are on stage and taking the pride of what he have, but they rejected his project 1 year or 2 years earlier, which was one of the cases why he felt so bad. And then it's like, I just feel it's so much hypocrisy also in the industry.
Of course, yeah.
But anyways, I'm happy. It's like a document of my life, and it's about nature, dusk to dawn.
Yeah.
It's
a very, very amazing project. And like to have that scope is also very, very rare. So.
And I'm very happy about the narrative.
Mm-hmm. And if we transition a little bit, further to your second album.
Yeah, sure.
And just to go into something completely different. Exactly. We got This Is Pop, which came out last year, basically. And could you tell us a little bit, what had changed in you? What made you do this type of music? Or this development of your music, if you can say that.
So, I mean, it's sometimes easy to have a sort of concept. Especially for me, like, that is one of the things with albums. I don't know if they necessarily need to be like that, but I feel the album is a little bit like a narrative, and I can feel that is also one thing that's sad with streaming.
Yeah.
That this just becomes one, people take out one track.
Mm-hmm.
But album is for me very much about narratives. Yeah. Otherwise, EPs can also be that. But since the Dusk to Dawn was such a free form, and the first ideas of, like, it was when I started working with Robin some years before with the Trust Me EP.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She gave me a lot of keys and openings into, like, the commercial world and understanding the freakiness of pop music. Yeah. Like, for instance, like, Michael Jackson was a person that I always just, that's a pedophile, you know.
Right,
We just laughed about him when I was small. And he was so connected with a naive mainstream world that you just consume because it's big, but you don't know why you consume it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's big because it's good, and then if you are critical, you sometimes miss it.
Yeah.
And for me, it was maybe I was too proud, but also I didn't understand text. It was when I started working with Robin, I started about thinking about text in another way. And she also gave me the keys and was like, but don't you know Michael?
Mm-hmm.
And she started like, look at this and this. And I was like, shit, this is freaky.
Yeah.
This is insane. Mm-hmm. And it's insanely good. And it's weird in a good way.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's weird on of other people, which is sad. But the greatness in the musicians, like it's like no borders of how freaky the music can be. Like, only if we're talking only like truly how it sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you need to be crazy to take these steps away from already existing like world.
Yeah.
And also have the beliefs in your project.
Yeah.
But we didn't trust me, and trust me had arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back to the Karlovac had also, I have people that says I don't have arrangements. I have. Always have arrangement, but arrangements can be, I mean, before it was maybe more jam based.
Yeah.
But with Robin, it came more and more verse and refrain. I mean, Trust Me is still very low, but I took a lot of this knowledge and with Dusk Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
But Dusk Dawn is in one way more, it has much more tracks that is more freeform in arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has some songs that's more strict and have more arrangements than the Trust Me EP.
Yes.
And of that ideas, I came into This Is Pop.
Yeah.
This Is Pop is based on pop music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like, if we look about Swedish House Mafia, I think I could say that Swedish House Mafia has something to say in this. What they have done is they have done a lot of tracks that has strict arrangements.
Yeah.
And that is why they have also become like mainstream and And how come, like, we have Beatles, Madonna, Drake, Elvis, like, it's James Brown, it's so many, like, different Sara Larsson, Lars Winnerbäck, all this in the same pot. Mm-hmm. They're all pop.
Right.
But they sound completely different. What is the thing they have in common? This is my belief, but mm-hmm. it's the arrangement.
Yeah.
I think it's basically the arrangements. It's... Yeah. If you have an arrangement, verse and refrain, or like make it up, mm-hmm. then you are on the right path of what's the definition of pop music.
Yeah.
Because it only means popular.
Yeah.
And that's a good, easy way to understand music is with arrangements. Mm-hmm. But it also takes away the sort of trancey feeling of getting lost, which I believe myself. Maybe music is my personal beliefs in music is more about getting lost mm-hmm. than have it like now I want to drink Coca-Cola.
Right.
It's for me. It's much more
like an exploration.
Yeah, or, exactly. And sometimes you drink something that's not good, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
So the concept was about pop. In the meaning of arrangement. So all tracks on this album is highly like arranged.
Yeah.
Some tracks are done without pop arrangements from the beginning, but then I have been struggling and making them to have radio edits.
Yeah.
And here's the inner sleeve. I think it's quite nice.
Yeah. Who took the photographs for this
one? The photos took... Kalle Eklund. He's a hairdresser. He lives in Paris now, and they have a good sense also for photo. And he made a whole photo session. Me and him did it in Madrid for around 2021, I think, or 2020. Mm-hmm. And then we have also Jelly Crystal on this album.
Right.
It was both written and composed two of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think it's a great album. I'm really, really proud of it. And it was also kind of nice to make something that fitted on one LP and not six LPs.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that was also like one of the concepts. Mm-hmm. It has to be one LP. I don't want to make a double LP. I want to make one LP.
A straight album.
Yeah, and like put it on the beginning. So here is the narrative. Maybe... Not so hardcore as the Dust and Dawn.
Mm-hmm. No,
when it's coming to texts and stuff. Here's the narrative. This is pop.
Yeah. More straightforward.
More straightforward, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And moving on from this period into almost getting up to now, you could also say that you've recently even had exhibitions of your work that was painting work.
Exactly.
Could you, like, what does that mean to you? What's the difference for you when you express yourself through paintings? As opposed to music?
I believe it's the sort of the same sense in one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's only different expressions. But of course, they are in different mediums and will, I guess, they activate the brain differently.
Mm-hmm.
Vision compared to hearing.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, I was painting a lot until I was... in my early 20s and done it all my whole life. But since my parents are artists, it was really hard for me to become an artist also, visual artist. It just it felt like, I guess it's the same for someone that's have a parent that's a smith or someone, the one that's having parents with economy and you want to make economy. And sometimes... You just take it because it's easy. And I don't know. But for me, it was a struggle to... Mm-hmm. And also maybe because when you are a teenager, it felt like you want to... In one way, you want to make your own path. Mm-hmm. But even if you have this like an idea, that's why I became an architect. Mm-hmm. Because it was close, but not close enough.
Yeah.
And then I had only the music like a hobby until... Mm-hmm. Me and Oscar was actually putting out, and I understood now I have gigs all around Europe, like every weekend, and it gives me a salary equal to like applying for architecture. Should I apply for architecture or should I go with the flow? And then, you know, suddenly you're in a industry business, and then it was music until more or less. I don't want to say it's only, but when COVID came, I understood that it will take away the gigs. So in the beginning, I was working in my studio. Like, it was, I actually felt it's no difference. It's just less people when I walk into the studio.
Right.
But after some months, I got really depressed. And it was because I started understanding I'm making music for my, I mean, you can make music that's on for your own. And I have actually a project that's coming up that has nothing to do really with the social context. But the, if we're talking about This Is Pop, which I was working on that time, and Dusty Dawn stuff, it's about social context.
The new, the
general music I make is for me, music is very connected with social. And it's like, often when I'm alone, I can absolutely, I listen sometimes very much to music when I'm alone, but I also have a lot of quiet when I'm alone, a lot.
Yeah.
Or like prefer to just listen to radio.
Yes, yes.
And not the podcast, radio, so I don't need to choose.
Select anything.
No, exactly.
So you would say, is that one of your main inspirations nowadays? Or what inspires you?
Actually, it is. I would say P2 is, and it's also like the, my even if I can get sometimes really sick on this minority radio programs every day, they also gives me a lot of inspiration.
Yeah,
I think it's really good. But sometimes I feel they should maybe have a whole channel that's like only like for this, because it's so important.
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel it's maybe they have too little and it should have more. And if you want to listen on only like music the whole day, because it's sometimes talking programs, but they have also music in this which is really interesting, because they don't you don't know what to expect, what's coming next.
No, that's a nice feeling.
It's really nice. But it was something we talked with This Is Pop that I wanted to say. It was you the with the COVID, and the, it's got me really depressed. So, and it was like, why am I actually doing this? Why am I sitting here alone in the studio if I don't even know when this is going to get over or if it's going to get over?
Right.
Because this was the, in the first month.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't go to the studio. And during this time, it also became a water leak in the locale, in the not in the studio room, but in
like the studio
space.
Complex or the space. Yeah.
So thanks God, nothing was actually destroyed or damaged, but I had to move out all the equipment. And I bought like for some years ago a big record console and stuff.
Right.
So instead of taking this to Shurgarda, my mother asked, you can have it in my studio on the countryside. So I moved there, and then in the beginning, I didn't know what where the world is going and stuff like that. I mean, I was not really afraid of, but it was more like, and somewhere here, I had been thinking of painting and drawing for a long time. But then I asked my mother, like, I'm thinking of starting painting again. And she was just harsh and said, you know where the colors is, just go out and paint. I was like, and then it was interesting because it's like when you have been practicing doing something a lot, and then you have haven't done it in 10 years, it's, you still have it in the head, but in the hand it's not really there yet. But it took me like quite fast, I was more or less back in track, and instantly I understood, holy groly shit, this is so important for me. How I haven't been doing this for so many years. And painting compared to making music is how I make music. They are very different in one way. And that's because since I'm not an instrumentalist or can't sing by default, my true instrument is with a paper and pen.
Yeah,
I can do what I want with this, but when I'm coming to a keyboard, I can play piano basically, but I need time or I want to have tools around me that it goes slowly, which can be really, really good also. It's not like something that's bad with that. But I can feel music for me is so combined with electricity and a dry environment where you can have electronic equipment.
Yeah.
And the painting for me is just go out and, in the savannah of Kenya or being in the north of Lofoten in the nature and just go out and paint. It's like no limitations in that sort of meaning. Or I can just take paper and pen and start writing when I'm flying.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sit with an iPad, for instance, maybe and stuff like that and stuff. But it's something with the electricity that I don't like, which gives me so much freedom. Yeah. And I don't want to say art, like visual art, is freedom because... if you take super big artists, someone like Ai Weiwei that make installations, that's not freedom for me.
Yeah.
It's not freedom to have 20 assistants that you have to email someone hey, dude, it's a little bit like Dusk to Dawn.
Right.
Even if I don't play, I need to organize this and I have to come to my studio and this and that. Mm-hmm. And that is something I don't have when I'm painting. There I'm completely alone.
Yeah.
And this is... Even if I make a track completely alone in my studio, I still have to send it to the mastering. I still have to deal with either my own record label and put it up. And I think it's just less hustle with the electronics, which is for me very nice. And I can understand people that have an instrument or a voice.
Yeah,
that's their And I think my true instrument is the pen or the pencil.
It's more of a direct connection.
It's much more of a direct connection in an analog domain or someone that's dancing. That is sometimes something that I can feel is... A little bit like we talked in the beginning with about Chess Damier and how they, as kids, just went into someone's parents' studio and recorded this amazing stuff.
Yeah,
it's a little bit like it should be, but it's hard. I think it's Lars Nils Ferlin that says you. The more you know, the more you don't know.
Yeah.
The more equipment you have, the more knowledge in one, but also you get .
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of a paradox.
It's
in a sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sometimes, of course, you need if you want to have ideas about super complex technical things, maybe you can't even achieve them. Without some tools and stuff, and that can be good or bad. It matters what you really want and what you want to get out from it.
That's quite a nice way to round things up, I think. And if people are excited about what's coming next, do you have anything in the pipeline? What are you excited about now?
Absolutely,
right now?
I have three musical albums. That's going on together with other people.
Okay.
One is a straight up solo project, Dusk Dawn, but which is classical music. And but it's there I'm just producing and setting things together.
Right. Yeah.
And two other Swedish artists, two different.
Exciting.
And I'm really looking forward for these projects. And then I have. I'm painting mostly of the time right now.
Yeah,
I have my next upcoming exhibition here in Stockholm at CF Hill.
Yes.
On Västra Trädgårdsgatan in December.
In December, okay.
And with my paintings, and then I have another project with together with two friends from Konstfack from the time when I was on the university.
That's awesome. So a lot of output to expect from you in the coming time. A lot of exciting projects.
And this is also something I want to say before we round up.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly believe in the cross-disciplinary.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if it's making sport and music, or but when you do different things, you activate your brain. And that is something I can feel benefits a lot when I started painting again.
Yeah.
Now I feel when I'm making music, now lately, I can feel it gives me so much more ideas, and also vice versa.
I totally agree. You need to kind of shock your brain sometimes.
Absolutely.
Into thinking differently. Very, very inspirational. And thank you so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And for everybody at home, make sure to listen to the last album, This Is Pop, but also the upcoming projects that are coming up. And visit the exhibition in December if you're here in Stockholm. So that was it for this episode of Electronic Talks, and see you next week.